All right. I confess, sometimes I do judge a book by its cover, and this cover just pulled me into it. The book is called Carpool Diem, which I already think is clever because
very funny.
Sees the day, sees the carpool, and the picture on the front features the body from the neck down of what's clearly a working mom, and she's holding 5 soccer balls, a pair of cleats, a thermos, and I thought, I think this is going to be part of my life, and I picked it up. The little kid who's playing soccer is named Charlotte, like my daughter. Plays travel soccer. And the husband's name is Tim. My husband's name is Tim. And I thought, well, maybe my biography has been written and I didn't know about it. So I picked it up. I loved it. I handed it to you. You loved it. We've got Nancy Starr, who wrote My Life Story, on the air. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you so much. All right. And I really had no idea about your family. I'm just relieved your name isn't Annie.
My name is not Annie Fleming, which was a tip off that this is not officially my story. I don't live in the New Jersey, New York area, but this story, unfortunately or fortunately, bears a striking similarity to real life. Can you give a quick synopsis about the book?
Sure. Carpool Diem is the story of a woman named Annie Fleming with a husband named Tim and a daughter named Charlotte, but it's not you. And when we meet Annie, she's got this really big corporate job, and her husband's great, her daughter's great, and she's got perfect childcare, which is the tip-off that something can't be true in this beautiful picture.
I was going to say, it's a tip-off, it's fiction.
Yes, exactly, it really is. And again, so Annie loses this big job in the very beginning of the book, and she's booted back home, and she discovers that this indeed wasn't true, that there's just everything is a mess at home. But the thing that really worries her is that her daughter seems to be lacking drive and ambition and kind of is at loose ends, and she feels that she's failed her somehow, and she's failed at her job, and now she feels she's failed her daughter, and she decides she's going to make this situation right by devoting herself to getting her daughter on the town's really high-powered elite soccer team. And then she is completely unprepared for the cutthroat culture and the crazy coaches and all that is part of that world, as you may know.
I am vaguely familiar with that world. Now let's talk a little bit.
Well, see, now it's so funny because here's Bets over here. My kids don't play soccer. In fact, the only way they did play soccer was my daughter would do cartwheels at the other end of the field and pick dandelions. So not in our blood. Right. However, the whole culture of the sports parents and the sports mom and the sports dad, I have actually written an entire YouTube video, and it's posted up there about what it's like to be a sports mom, a bad sports mom or a good sports mom. Right. So I can relate. I understand the feelings of parents watching their kids out there and the ones who want to cheer heavily and, boo the other team. Right. And you're not really supposed to do that, it turns out. And in soccer, there's rules. Am I right?
There are a lot of rules, and some teams there are more rules than others. And actually, people have told me that their kids never played sports, but they were in the theater, in a theater group, or they were in a dance company, and it's just the same. It's, any of these.
I think it's really it's the concept of a stage mom or dad. Yeah. It's the parent who becomes obsessed. I'm not claiming it's me, but it might be. The parent who becomes obsessed with the career of the child, whether it's a soccer career, right. a tennis career, a singing career, and they lose sight of really rational behavior.
Right. And I think it starts out, for a lot of parents, it's that you feel like if your kid isn't good at this, they're not going to have a good life. There's some little jump that we make in our heads. If they're not successful in the sport or in this play, they're going to have a bad life, and we don't want that to happen to them. So,
well, I have to say, although I never put it in those words, I remember feeling, how come she's not trying harder?
Right.
How am I going to teach her drive and commitment?
Right.
And then I love this. I definitely identified with some of the insane parents on the sideline. And at one point, you hand out what are called the anti-rage lollipops.
Oh, those were so funny. Will you explain what those are, Nancy?
Yes, this actually, the book is fiction, but that was inspired by something that really did happen. My younger daughter was on a very elite soccer team when she was 8. And very elite. And in our town, there was a parent designated on every team. They had to be, we called them sage reps, set a good example, but we nicknamed them rage reps. And these were the people who had to go over to the parents who were screaming and say, would you please, quiet down? And then the parents would give them the finger. It was very unpleasant.
Oh, come on.
Honestly. So this woman came up with this idea to bring a bag of lollipops because she said that way if somebody was yelling and you gave them a lollipop, you really can't yell if you've got a lollipop in your mouth. And that really worked.
Let me just say, Nancy, that's a soccerific idea. And let me also point out, that's a quote from the book.
I have to say something funny. I actually talked to my own Charlotte at home about this and about the anti-rage lollipop.
Right.
And my daughter Charlotte, who played travel soccer, gosh, probably 7 years. She's in high school, and I put my foot down. And I said, "That's it. We're doing free soccer at the high school." You know, mm-hmm. She's on a team. I'm not traveling. I'm not
right.
Which, by the way, is rare. Most people continue to say, "How do you expect your child to make the varsity team if she's not playing the other three seasons on a club team?" So probably my daughter is doomed to a life of laziness.
She's not going to amount to anything, Sal.
Well, my daughters are doomed too, right along with yours, because that's where they are.
Well, at least your kids had a chance. Mine never did.
Well, my Charlotte said, "Mom," and then she rattled off the name of three parents who were parents on our travel soccer team for 5 years, and she said, "A lollipop would not keep those guys quiet."
Well, I think I agree with her. That's probably right. But you know, I had a conversation with a guy who's a sports psychologist at a university who told me that this has been studied and they have a name for it, which, of course, I didn't know when I wrote it. They call them the dum-dum league because, you know, the lollipops, they have the dum-dums.
Oh. Yeah. So it wasn't a new idea that your friend came up with.
I think she came up with it first because this is a long time ago, but we had no idea that we were at the cutting edge of parental control.
I do remember that even just in AYSO soccer, which is where my daughter learned the cartwheel technique, they did have rules for the parents, you know, yes, that you weren't allowed to yell and cheer and do all these things. They really wanted you just to sit there.
Did they ever have the rule? We had this on this team that you can't use verbs.
No.
Oh, so that was always fun because you knew that the reason was that you weren't supposed to yell attack and kill him and kill her or shoot, but then we'd want to say go team, and we would all get worried that that was a verb, and you know we were going to get in trouble if we said go, because
interesting. A bunch of people thinking, now how could I make that a gerund? Going is kind of a no.
All right, so here's my philosophical question, because now you're the expert on when it's okay to cheer and not cheer in sports, and that this is another little idea that's been floating around in this empty head of mine.
Right.
Is at what point are you allowed to cheer for a team, or even worse, boo for the other team? And I think that the difference is either at a college level or a professional level where you're paying. Because you know how you go to a professional sport, they actually give you things to wave around to distract the other team, which would be a big no-no anywhere.
That's a very funny thought. I think it would be really great if it's some of, like, at a high school soccer game, if you were to give out those distracting things and see what would happen.
You'd be handcuffed.
I guess that it's the level at which the coach will not hear what you're doing, and your kid can't get in trouble for it anymore. So if you've got a professional soccer player, you know, and you're in the stands, you're going to be pretty far away, and the coach won't know who you are.
Even in college, they used to do it. Don't you remember the cheers against BU?
Yeah, but Betsy, I'm thinking maybe it's never appropriate to boo.
No, it is. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
College behavior doesn't necessarily sanction appropriate behavior. You need to distinguish. Just because they do it doesn't make it okay.
Have you been to a hockey game ever?
Well, hockey.
That's another story.
Yeah, that's
all
true.
Right, let's talk a little bit about the coach.
Okay.
Because what you have created in the coach, and I'm not going to say it's an identical match to the guy that coached my daughter's team, but it's darn close. It's darn close. And these are adults whose lives revolve around, a commitment to 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids, which is admirable, but who see no other life around them. How do you, was that exactly the case in your personal experience?
Well, we counted up one day that my daughters, between the two of them, they had, I think, 15 coaches, and they certainly never had one exactly like Winslow West, who's insane, and he starts out crazy, and then he goes even more, you know, over the top. But, you know, we did observe a lot of coaches who just seemed to not understand that the kids who they were coaching were at little, you know,
right,
9, 10, 11, 12, and who take themselves so seriously and really, you know, become kind of control freaks. Luckily, we didn't have one like this. He's just really awful. You have to. I don't think you had Winslow West exactly.
No. But I will say ours was named Drago, which and I will also tell you that I have I flew home early with Charlotte from a family vacation in order to make the game.
But
yeah.
I
was afraid.
I know, yeah. And I do think that when you are coaching a team and the team wants to win, you do have to have rules and you do have to put the team first. And they kind of instill that in these kids. And it does do what your book says. It sifts out the kids who really aren't committed, you know, and the families who aren't committed. And that was my problem with my son playing hockey when he wanted to do travel hockey. And I just said, I'm not willing to do that to our family. Right. Because you're really, and you see it in your book, Carpool Diem, you see, I mean, they only have one child. So Charlotte, you know, it doesn't affect that much, you know, the family dynamics. But if there had been another child, forget it.
Would. We used to always see parents, you know, families with three kids, and they'd be running, you know, across the state from one place to another. But, you know, I also think what happens is that, that's the dog in the background.
I heard the dog.
That's real life. We love it.
But because of the kids, no matter how they play on a team, they have to try out again every year. There's a lot of anxiety that the kid isn't going to make it the next time. And I think that plays into it as well, so that maybe some things that you would disagree with, you're just not willing to, because what if then your kid doesn't get on the team next year, no matter how good they are?
It's a strange balance, letting them play competitively, and letting them be real kids. Nancy, will you stay with us over the break?
I'd be delighted to.
We are talking with author Nancy Starr. Her book is Carpool Diem. It is a novel. It says on the cover, ambition, backstabbing, and politics makes you think it's about the political convention that went on. But it's really just about being a soccer mom and how it isn't what it used to be.
Well, and what soccer teams are all about. They're nuts. They're nuts. And it's not just soccer. We're going to talk more about that when we come back after the break.
No verbs.
No verbs
is very funny.
I'd go just for the lollipop.
Most of the parents I know wouldn't know what a verb is.
We're talking with author Nancy Starr, and her new book, Carpool Diem, is out. Sal and I have read it, and we loved it. It's about life as a busy, busy, busy person, a working mom, a working dad, and a child who plays on a very competitive soccer team. And my question, Nancy, I'm going to flip back to soccer because it's kind of a different world for me. But one of the gripes I had when my kids were in the, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old sports, whether it was soccer or basketball or whatever they were playing, whether they won or lost, they got a trophy. And I always thought to myself, you know, at what point do they just say, good game, you know, we're done? And this whole idea of building these kids into thinking that they get recognition for every single thing they do. Did you find that as a soccer mom, that it was tough to then teach them how to win for a trophy instead of just lose for a trophy?
Yeah, well, the trophies, you know, the kids really love the trophies. And in fact, my younger daughter started playing first, and my older daughter wanted to start playing because she saw the trophies accumulating, which, may I say, now that they're both older, I'm wondering what we're supposed to do with them.
I have an answer. I have a great answer from a friend of mine. You put them all together with your child in the middle. You take a big picture, and you save the photo.
That's a great idea.
Goodbye, trophies.
You throw the trophies away, and if your kid's really irritating you, you throw your kid away, too.
I love that idea.
This woman is a muse, a brilliant woman. Actually, I like that. I thought the trophies were fun. Bets, we feel differently.
My kids love the trophies.
They love the medals. They put them up. They collect dust. They make her happy.
I know, but then they think every single thing they do in life, they need a reward.
Yeah, you know,
I feel that way.
Yeah,
life quickly teaches them that isn't the case. So,
that's true, and that feeds into what you were talking about—the stress of, are they going to make the next team? Are they not? And at what point do they just stop trying because they know they're not going to make it? I don't know. You know, when these coaches have these philosophies that my team is the only one, this is the best one, this is where you want to be, is it hard to then transfer from one team to another? And you address that in the book a little bit.
Well, you know, I also think that, you know, in addition to that, there's that question of what we're teaching them when we teach them that they have to listen to these crazy coaches, because I think most of us have been in situations where we're working for crazy people, and, you know, shouldn't they also be able to know how to leave a bad situation? That's something we sometimes forget to teach them. we're just so concentrating on trying to get them into that great team and to be a good team
there
player.
Actually are a lot of really good lessons in this that you, if you think about it, because we had this situation a few months ago in our office. One of our kids had a teacher that made a bad decision and was having the kids do what everybody thought was kind of too much of an assignment and too little of a time and pushing them too hard. At what point do you say it's okay to stand up to authority? And it's a tough balance. So,
and another similarity with that is that I don't know if this has ever happened to you, where you hear, your kid tells you about something when they're little and they, still can't necessarily stand up for themselves so easily. They tell you something that the teacher's done, and then you want to go call the teacher and complain, and then they tell you no, because then I'm going to be punished for the rest of the year. And it's the same on these teams, where if you see something that you don't think is right, but you worry that if you speak up, your kid's going to be punished for the rest of the season.
I think this brings up a lot of different points. Some of them are negative, but let's remember some of the lessons are positive. I mean, I can say that when my daughter joined the team, and this coach was so driven and very stern. And she's a pretty sensitive kid. And we actually had a couple of teachers at her school say she cannot join that team. She will crumble and die. Mm-hmm. And she survived. And she learned that sometimes authority figures scream and yell. And you don't die. And I'm just saying, I'm going to put in one plug for that was a good thing.
No, I would agree with that. And I'm not against coaches. I'm not against sports. And my kids have played, but they've played soccer. They ran track. One of them is in college now. The other's in her last year of high school. They've gotten so much from being on those teams. So I'm not opposed to any of that. And I've met a lot of coaches who I think are inspirational and can change kids' lives. But they're not good to make fun of.
I was just going to say that. And they're not so much fun to read about. And he was a wonderful Vince Lombardi. So here's my
but
question.
We got to give them a shout out. So I thank you to all those great coaches out there.
And let me ask you something, because some of this did stem from real life. You said you live in a community. There are travel leagues. Did you feel any repercussions after writing this book?
Well, I'll tell you, before the book came out, I had a lot of experiences where people would tell me what the book was about, that they knew who the book was about, so they hadn't read it yet.
If they knew me!
That started to scare me. Sometimes they would say, one person said, I know the book is about so-and-so, and I didn't even know the person they were telling me about. So that stuff made me really nervous. When the book came out, I was kind of holding onto my chair thinking, oh, now what's going to happen? So really what happened was I got a lot of phone calls from people telling me that, their cousin has a coach like that, or their friend in California has a coach like
that. People could relate.
So if there are people gathering in houses, tearing the book apart, I'm not hearing about it. Or, I'm going to be going to soccer games this fall, and hopefully people won't move to the other side of the
bed. I think they will have a good sense of humor and understand.
It is
a really fun book. It's Carpool DM. But Nancy, I want to ask you really quickly about one of your other books that you wrote. Because you have a whole list of them. You've written children's books, and you've written some other novels. The International Guide to Tipping. I want to hear about that one, because we were just talking about this, how much you tip, if it's bad service, if it's good service. What is this book about that you did?
Well, I wrote that book quite a while ago. I was working for a movie company at the time, and I was traveling a lot internationally, and I never knew what to do. And the book, it was just serendipity. I told a friend of mine who worked in a publishing company, could you please publish a book? I don't know how to tip anywhere, and I need a book. And she thought it was a great idea, and the publisher wanted to do it, and they didn't have a writer, and they came back to me, and I ended up researching and writing it. But I still never know what to tip.
Well, it's a great idea, because when you go to certain countries, tipping is usually expected. Sometimes
it's not.
Did
you hear what she said? You wrote the book and you still don't know?
I have to go look for it on my shelf, and quickly consult it, because, I know, it's very confusing.
You use it as a guide.
The main thing that I learned from researching that book is that nobody really knows what they're doing when it comes to tipping, and that it's always okay to say to somebody, what do people normally give you, and then to try to reach for the middle ground. I do that all the time. Do people normally tip you for this?
All right, what do you do when delivery is included? Like when you order takeout, say, in an office, and they have a $2 delivery charge, which is a tip fee, and you say to the guy, is the tip included? And he looks and he goes, well, there's a delivery fee included. Do you still tip?
Well, I would call the next time I place the order. I would ask to talk to the manager of the place.
Well,
and say,
I do.
Listen, are you expecting us to tip these guys, or are you giving them that $2 directly, or are you putting that in your pocket? Because that's the only way you're going to find out in that situation what's really going on.
This should have been called the tipping point.
Uh-huh.
It's really difficult.
I would say if you want to be the first on that delivery person's list, you might want to go for the tipping.
Well, wait, no, that's I have to ask. When you order and you pick up the food at the restaurant, do you tip? Yeah.
That's a tough one, too. Now I'm at the point where when I order, go to the local Mexican restaurant, the person at the counter is my daughter's friend, so I absolutely tip.
Well, that's different. But let's say
probably now I'm going to always tip because I'm always going to think that that's somebody's daughter's friend.
Well, here's what I think. I think, like, at the restaurant we go to downstairs, the waitress who takes the order actually assembles the whole thing, and she's taking time away from her tables. I tip then.
Right.
If it's just the person answering the phone, the hostess or whatever, I don't tip.
Right.
That's my rule of thumb.
Yeah, I have the same thing. It's fluid. But if they put something, if they have a jar and it says, help me go to college, I always tip. I'm just a sucker.
I'm putting that jar on my desk. Help me pay for Botox. I think people would put money in there.
Hey, I want to know what happens. That's a great idea. Let me know what happens with
my
that.
Feel free to use it. You're in New Jersey. We're not going to impede on each other. The book that we love so much is called Carpool DM. The author is Nancy Starr. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Nancy.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. Fun.